Hey, Curtis.
Hey, Oz.
What are we watching this week?
This week, we've got American Ninja meets Kung Fu, plus a pinch of Buried. Let's spin in some of the hit CBS series Mom, and let's also throw in the eyeball from Evil Dead 2. This week, we're watching Kill Bill Volume 2.
I like that. Yeah. You know, I don't. Mom's one of those shows that I never even knew existed until my wife and I fall asleep on the couch on the weekends, and then when I wake up at like 2:30 a.m., it's on.
Yeah,
and so I'm like, okay.
I think it's got two of the funniest actors in Hollywood in it. Allison Janney and Anna Faris are both just hysterical.
Yes,
and like they're great at everything they do.
Yeah, but,
like it's. And it's kind of a throwback to like 80s, like 70s and 80s and 90s sitcoms where like they would tackle real stuff.
Oh yeah.
And it wasn't just yucks for the sake of yucks.
Yeah. Or just like, here's a screwball situation we're in. Yeah. They're dealing with depression and they're dealing with addiction and it's not a bad show. Yeah. It really wasn't.
We've been watching on and off Patreon subscriber, Melissa L is a big fan of Roseanne.
Mm-hmm.
And
you know, I like Roseanne.
Like her politics aside and stuff.
Right.
And those didn't really surface, you know, in the show nearly as much.
No.
As in like, you know, the relaunch a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. But again, like funny show. John Goodman carried that show, first of all.
Oh,
like,
absolutely. He was hysterical.
Lori Metcalf was amazing too.
Yes, those two.
But they would tackle some real stuff in that show.
Yeah. And absolutely. Yeah.
While being funny at the same time. Yeah.
I always enjoyed Roseanne for sure. So welcome back, listener viewers, to another week of Let's Talk About Flicks, the podcast where we take a monthly theme, new theme this month.
New month, new theme.
Well, not really a new theme.
Repurposed.
New month and a revisit to our theme. It is February, the month of love.
Ooh la la.
And we are going to do this entire episode in French. Just you are. I don't know enough. It is Wife's Choice Month again.
It is third annual Wife's Choice Month.
And we are kicking off the month with your wives' picks.
Yes. Well, again, doing the recap last month, January of 2024, was Rhyming Titles. And we ended Rhyming Titles with Kill Bill Volume 1.
Yep.
And as I consulted with my wife.
My wife, Borat.
Borat. That's a Borat reference. She's like, well, why don't you just keep going with Kill Bill Volume 2? I like those movies. Like, okay, cool. So we're flowing, even though we're changing months and themes, we are going to continue with Kill Bill, and we will hit Kill Bill Volume 2.
Killiam William. So, yeah. With it being your pick, by the way, I'm one of your hosts, Oz.
Oh, I'm the other host, Curtis.
And we do want to give a shout out to Patreon subscribers, Don S., Aaron A., Mandy K., and Melissa L. Thank you again for your patronage.
Thank you, what it all.
Your movie, so I've got the cast.
Yeah, let's hear it.
This is it's kind of a weird one because if you watch the credits, like, the cast for the credits is like the entire cast of both volumes.
It includes both. So
So I'm not going to go with those. I'm just going to stick with this film's cast, which we, of course, Uma Thurman is the bride / Beatrix Kiddo. We find out her official name in this one.
Yeah.
The Black Mamba of the Deadly Viper Assassination Squad. David Carradine as Bill. We actually get him on camera.
We just saw glimpses of him in the first one.
He's the former leader of the Assassin Squad, codenamed Snake Charmer.
Glimpses of Bill. That was my favorite ABC album from the 80s.
Of Bill. Michael Madsen as Bill's brother Bud, aka Sidewinder. Definitely the squad member that has fallen on hard times. post assassination career.
I think more rolled into Hard Times.
I think so. Late. He rolls into everything late.
Everything's 20 minutes late to everything.
We get the, I think, the great Daryl Hannah in this role. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, I wouldn't necessarily put the great Daryl Hannah along many of her film roles, but I think she really nailed it in this one as L Driver.
She definitely brought everything to it.
Yes. California Mountain Snake. And really, like, the bride's arch nemesis.
Yes.
Garden Lou shows up again as Pai Mei. I'll let you cover Pai Mei. I love Pai Mei. Mm-hmm. Michael Park shows up again as arguably one of my favorite characters in this movie. Esteban Viejo.
I have mixed feelings. Well, this will come up later. I have mixed feelings about the character, but... it's a good performance.
Yes. One of my favorite performances in the movie.
Yes, I will agree
absolutely
with you.
Absolutely an atrocious character in the movie.
Yes.
But, and then we get, that's really pretty much it. We get Perla Haney Jardine as BB,
which, yeah.
It's just really, that's really about it. Sid Haig makes an appearance. Yeah. Like, that's about it. Larry Bishop shows up. Like, I don't know. Like, that's really it. I mean, as for an epic like this, I mean, it's a couple hours long. Not a huge cast.
Well, as opposed to me rattling off 88 names last week for Kill Bill Volume 1.
That was crazy.
It was crazy. 88.
So, but yeah, and all those names obviously show up in this film at the credits. But yes. They're not there. So, take it away, my friend.
All right. Well, hey, as for the plot, again, we left off, you know, the cliffhanger from Volume 1 was Bill was talking to Sophie Fatale in the hospital, and he asks Sophie, does she know that her daughter is still alive? And then roll credits. So that's the big cliffhanger. Spoiler alert for Kill Bill Volume 1. But yeah, that's where we leave off with the first one, and we pick up with the second one with the scene that I don't think I saw this in the trivia, but I wouldn't be shocked if they shot this in post. But there's the scene of her and she's driving at the camera and she's talking to the camera.
And it's got like the rear projection, old Hollywood style. It's fun.
Yeah. It's fun enough, but that's basically like, I'm on my way and I am gonna kill Bill.
Yeah, I left.
I have a feeling we'll come up with you later, but
no. I was just gonna say, I left titular line off here. I felt this was just way too obvious and forced. Like, most of the time it slides in somewhat smoothly, but this is like looking right at the camera before the credits and saying, I'm gonna Kill Bill Volume 2.
I'm going to air quotes Kill Bill.
Somehow she spoke in bold underline. It was weird.
I am going to titular line.
Right. Yeah, so I left that out. It didn't show up again.
So we pick up then with chapter, as I'm looking at my notes, chapter socks, which I meant to be chapter six. I must have had the white socks on my brain at the time. I must
have been socks.
Reminiscing about Robin Ventura.
Must have been.
The hot corner. So chapter six, Massacre at Two Pines, where we get more of the prelude to... Mm-hmm. To the scene, because again, we pick up in the beginning of the first one with the telltale end, you know, where it's
I guess I could have referenced all these characters as well, but whatever.
It's not really about them anyways. So we pick up there with the wedding rehearsal. We have the Reverend and the Reverend's wife, Tommy, the husband to be, Tommy Plimpton, as well as some friends there, and Rufus, he's the man.
He is the man.
He's the organist, played by Sam Jackson.
He's been all of them. Like, yes. Yeah. And I love it that you know it's Sam Jackson, even though they don't ever show his face. You're like, yep,
that's Sam Jackson. Yeah. the very pregnant the bride, because at this point we still haven't heard her name, goes outside to get some air, and she hears someone playing a flute. Which would get my attention. I don't know about you.
Well, and it's more like a lute, really. Like, it's not even like a marching band flute. It's like I don't know. It's It's something you'd see in Zelda or something.
it does look very Zelda-like. It's like one third flute, two thirds didgeridoo.
Yeah, it's like a bamboo shoot with holes in it.
So, and of course, she notices that she knows what the instrument is, and it's mm-hmm. Bill. Her body language perks up. She goes outside, and you see him for the first time, and hello, kiddo.
Yeah.
And then we get the fun exchange. How'd you find me? I'm the man.
Yeah, sorry. I thought Rufus was the man.
there's two the man in this movie.
True. There's men.
Tarantino always writes this, like, yeah, again, I know I used the term hyper realistic a lot mm-hmm. last week, but again, this dialogue, nobody actually talks like this.
No.
I'm the man.
Yeah.
Although whenever Patreon subscriber Melissa Ells asks me a question that I just want to give like a pointless answer to, my response is always because I like to party.
Fair enough.
Why'd you put the cereal in the fridge? Like the party.
I like the party.
So tip of the cap to Patreon subscriber yeah. Melissa L for putting up with my zany antics.
You are a wild man.
And that's me. Who put cereal in the fridge? I'm the man.
I like the party.
I like the party.
Ricky Bobby Inc.
She asks Bill if he's going to be nice because she immediately suspects him. You know, she knows what he is. He's a killer.
Oh, yeah.
And
are you going to be nice? Like, yeah. Like, what are you going to do? Keep him out?
Yeah. And I'll do my best, but no promises.
I'll be sweet.
Yes. She's marrying Tommy. She's working in his record store. They talk. She eventually introduces him to Bill to Tommy as her father, which I can't imagine sat well with Bill.
Well, it kind of caught him off guard when uh-huh. he's, yeah, he just kind of, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
More like the father.
Uh-huh. So, you know, he turns to Tommy and says, you know, isn't it bad luck to see the bride in her dress before the wedding? And Tommy kind of leans in, you know, with kind of trying to impress his soon-to-be father-in-law. I guess I like living dangerously. And Bill's just kind of like, I know just what you mean.
Yeah.
Just because he knows what's coming.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Which is, it's tongue-in-cheek because, of course, we know that this guy is a part of her, like, witness protection kind of life. Yeah. To where she's like, I need to find the dumbest person I can.
Yeah, and they haven't been together long because if she, you know, if she got pregnant with Bill,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're doing the math. You're looking at most they've known each other for 8 months.
Yeah, and here they are getting hitched.
Yeah, at most 8 months, and yeah, and so the bride turns to Bill, says thank you. The camera pulls out all in one shot outside of the church, mm-hmm. and we see the other four divas walk in with guns, all holding. Fully automatic weapons, yeah. I should say.
Where were they? Like, I'm just curious. Not that it matters, but it's like she was out on the front with Bill there for yeah. a couple of minutes, you know, to catch some air. Like, where were they? They weren't, because you're in Texas. It's not like there's shrubbery to hide behind.
Shrubbery.
You know, it's like there weren't vehicles. It's like they cut back and here they are, like, dressed in all black. And it's like... It's just like across the street.
It's like in the Three Amigos. They all just stood very still.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's like Drax. A bunch of Draxes over there.
I move so slowly. So, yeah, they mow them all down.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of them. We then cut to present day. Bud is sitting on the steps of his trailer and he's talking to Bill. And you get the idea they haven't talked in a while and they have kind of a strained relationship. You know, yeah. there's a borderline respect there. But you can tell the relationship is very frayed.
Yeah.
And Bill just tells her, like, she killed the entire Crazy Eight and Oren. We learn that Bud is a bouncer at a local strip club. Mm-hmm. So, as you said before, he has not done much with his life.
Years. Even in his exchange with Bill, you get the sense that Bud's, he even kind of like, we deserve whatever's coming to us.
Yeah.
You know, like, Bill's almost like, you need to protect yourself. Mm-hmm. Bud's like, dude, like, after what we did to her, she deserves this opportunity.
Yeah. Bill confirms that she has a Hanzo sword.
Yeah.
And he asks, like, you still have yours, right? Again, trying to tell Bud, like, you need to protect yourself. She's coming.
A little urgency here, buddy.
Yeah. And so I sold it.
Yeah, hawked
you,
it.
You hawked a Hattori Hanzo's sword. It's priceless. Well, in El Paso, I got $250 for
right,
it.
Not in El Paso, it ain't.
Oh, even here, Bill says the bride's first name, and they're still bleeping it.
So, yeah.
We then get Chapter 7, The Lonely Grave of Paula Schultz.
Mm-hmm.
Bud arrives to work at his very, very scummy strip club.
Extremely. Like,
and his very scummy, coke-snorting boss, played by Joey Bishop's son, is there. This was a fun performance. I really like the scene here.
Yeah.
Who very, very low-key just reams out Bud, cancels his shifts, gives him a hard time for wearing his hat there. And Bud is just, he's such a conundrum of a character.
Yes.
He's equal parts, arrogant and just has no self-worth at the same time. It's a very interesting character.
I got the vibe. And of course, we never find out what the demise of the Divas was. Why they stopped doing what they were doing.
Yeah. Or if there was just no purpose to it anymore.
Right. But clearly, there's a lot of people, I even know some that their entire self-worth is tied up in their job.
Mm-hmm.
And for Bill, it's like, I was good at that and I excelled at that. And now that's gone. And what am I going to do now? Mm-hmm. I'm going to live in a trailer and, like you said, work at a strip club, clean toilets at a strip club.
Yeah.
Not that there's no hierarchy, but be bossed around by the strippers at a strip club.
Yeah.
They've got no respect for me.
He could take this place apart in moments if he really wanted to.
Yeah. And you get the sense he knows that. Yeah. But
he just lets it happen.
Yeah.
So again, just weird.
It is a tough character. Interesting
combination of traits for this character. Bud goes home that night. He kind of takes a moment, just looks into this dark hill in front of his house, goes inside, the camera pans down, and the bride is hidden underneath his trailer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She comes out with her Hanzo sword. We hear Johnny Cash playing from inside, like an old record player.
Yeah.
She eventually then tries to rush him. She swings open the trailer door and runs in, and he's sitting there just in like a lawn chair with a double barrel shotgun and just pumps a round of rock salt right in her chest.
Yeah.
Just sends her flying like 20 feet back. I love how they filmed this scene too.
Yeah. Cause she does. You like, oh, she's got the jump. Nope.
Yeah, and you think that there's going to be like a sword fight or something like that, and nope, just boom, and she's out.
Yeah, and he just taunts her.
He kneels over, she spits in his face, he spits back at her, he spits big mouthful of chew right on her.
Yeah.
He just says, I win, then puts a syringe of sedative right in her, knocks her out cold. He then calls Elle, who initially assumes it's Bill.
Right.
Love it. Wrong brother, you hateful.
Michael Madsen just nailed this role.
Yes, he did. This was the role Michael Madsen was born to play. I caught the cowgirls, never been caught. Bud says he's got a new Hanzo sword and will sell it to her for $1 million. That's a little more than $250 in El Paso.
Right. Well, he's gonna hawk it elsewhere.
She gives him one condition: she must suffer to her last breath.
Yeah.
Later the night, the bride comes to as we hear digging, her wrists and ankles are bound. He just tells her, I'm going to bury you alive.
Yeah. It's like he's got, such a flip-flop from, because he's in survival mode.
Yeah.
And he's doing what he's good at.
Yeah.
And it's so bizarre because, he sits there on the stoop of his trailer and tells his brother, she deserves her revenge and we deserve whatever fate we have coming. Mm-hmm. And now that the fate's on his doorstep, he's like, I'm going to bury you alive.
Yeah.
Like,
and he's so nonchalant about
it. Oh, yeah. Like, it's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
He even has a friend, a really odd looking dude. Is his friend. Yeah.
Kind of tiny arms, too.
Yeah, very much so.
Like, he's got a can of beer in his hand at one point, and he, takes a drink, and he, sticks his elbow all the way out.
He's got to get leverage.
Yeah.
But it's like, but Bud doesn't care. Like, he's like, this is my friend. Yeah. And you could tell, they've done some awful things together.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This isn't the first body they've buried.
I just love, like, casket. Even Bud's trying to hype her up, like, you know, isn't she the prettiest blah, blah, blah you've ever seen? Mm-hmm. I've seen better. Like, you know, like, sure you have. Sure you have.
So they throw her in the coffin. He tells her, this is for breaking my brother's heart. And I love this little sequence of them nailing it down, because there's like, there's light just peeking in, in around the seam, the top seams of this coffin. And as they hit every nail, it just gets darker and darker and darker. And it's frightening. It's absolutely frightening. Yeah. Uma Thurman's performance here, like, she, she does a good job selling this.
Yes.
And then, you know, they, you hear that the coffin get dropped into the grave. And you just hear the dirt pouring on top.
Yeah, because, you know, our point of view is still in the coffin.
Yes, the camera stays with
her. I remember when we, I think we may have seen this in theater together. Mm. It was just pitch black in the, in the theater. And just, and then they turn the volume way up when they start showering all the dirt on top of her.
We then cut to another title card, Chapter 8, The Cruel Tutelage of Pai Mei. Mm-hmm. We see Bill with his bamboo flute again around like a campfire with a young, the bride, telling the story about Pai Mei. You know, Pai Mei trained Bill. She's so taken by the story, too.
She's hooked.
Yeah. She's just so hooked by Bill, hooked by the story. And he's you know, he's a very compelling figure.
Yeah. He's got her eating out of the palm of his hand.
Yeah. Talks about Pai Mei killing monks and using, and tells her a little bit about the 5-point palm heart exploding technique.
Yeah. That won't come back later.
No, of course not. Why mention something like that?
Right. Yeah. So specifically.
She asks, you know, will he teach me that? Like, no, he didn't teach anybody that. He didn't teach me that.
Yeah.
And I'm Bill. And he's sending kiddo to trainer. If you flash him a defiant eye, he'll pluck it out. Again.
That's
going to come back. we then cut to Asia, Eastern Asia.
I love the film stock used in this too.
Yes,
like it's really got that like gritty Asian exploitation film look to it.
Late '70s.
Yeah. It's like, where do you find this stuff, Tarantino? Like, where did you find that? Because I mean, we're talking early 2000s.
Yeah,
we're not full blown digital cinema yet. Mm-hmm. It's like, where do you get that film stock? Oh, it's just so fun to look at.
Yeah. So Bill drops her off. She walks up the stairs. He just starts insulting her, just starts laying into her. And she asks him, or he asks her, you know, attack me with this sword. And he almost tears her arm off.
Yes.
Like, she swings at him and just misses and misses and misses. And he's just dodging and dodging and dodging. And he eventually just gets her arm pinned back and threatens to tear it off. And you believe that he could.
Yeah.
Like, he's not being figurative here.
And Uma sells it. I mean, like, she just looks like she's in terrible pain.
Yes.
But he's also almost like, he's not supernatural, but it's still just like Asian cinema. Like, at one point he's standing on the blade of her sword and
she thrusts right at him. He just jumps up and stands on her outward thrusted sword,
and even the look on her face is like, what?
Wouldn't you look like that too?
Well, yeah, but it's funny. But it's just funny because it's like, it almost it's like a blending of, she's there to train and is like, not like, she's surprised by this supernatural ability.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, a lot of times you find, like, in the world of these, like, these type of, like, you know, Japanese or Asian films, like, everybody's in on the lore, but this is like a blending of, like, he's part of that exploitation and she's not. So when he does that to her, she's like shocked, like, what do I do?
So we then cut to, you know, training montage kind of thing. And he has her practice it's called a 3-inch punch, you know, where you take your fully extended fingers, you put them up to a board, and then you just close your hand and punch. You know, it's not a long ways to go, but you're doing full force. So her knuckles get bloodied fast. Yes. You get the idea. She's probably broken some fingers. Mm-hmm. You know, she's trying to eat rice with chopsticks with these broken fingers. And he's like, no. Cause she goes to like, just eat directly out of the bowl. And he's like, no, you eat like a person.
Yeah.
And so he forces her with these broken fingers to use these chopsticks to eat rice. And then we cut back to the bride in the coffin.
Mm-hmm.
So we're back here, and she's calmed herself down. Bud left her with a flashlight for some reason. And she pulls a switchblade out of her boot, which I was reading in the trivia. It was the exact same switchblade that Michael Madsen used to cut the cop's ear off.
Nice.
Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah, I didn't get to the trivia yet.
She cuts her bindings, and then she uses that 3-inch punch technique to punch up through the coffin. And she crawls out of the grave, Oz.
She kind of flies out of the grave. Kind of a cool scene as we see her, like, rising up through the dirt. Got the vibe that's like, man, he buried her like 18 feet down there.
Most people go 6 feet down. Right. We go 18 just to be sure.
Right. Hey, we Amish do things 1.5 times that you do.
And he went to bowl 15 frames.
Exactly.
We then get chapter 9, L and I. No pun intended there.
No, not at all.
Again, we're still out in the south, the southwest by Bud's. And we see Elle driving to Bud's in a Pontiac Firebird Trans Am with a big old Firebird right on the hood. Exact kind of car that you see this arrogant character drive.
Oh, yeah.
The gaudiest vehicle she could find. You get the idea that she's just, like, her entire life is overcompensating.
Yes.
Because she's so jealous of the bride.
Oh, I say she's always been in the bride's shadow. With everybody, like with Bill, with everybody. And she just doesn't know how to break out of it because that's her driving force.
Yeah. Let's see. Elle pulls up from the hill across from Bud's, and we see the bride. Or I said that wrong. Elle is on the hill across from Bud's, watches. I think I'm still getting things wrong here.
I don't think Elle was watching. Elle was in the car.
Elle was watching.
The bride
watches Elle pull up to Bud's. There he goes. And then we get the go, she goes red. Just like, she saw Oren. Yeah. Just like when we saw her, when she saw Vernita. Bud is sloppily making like the worst margaritas
ever. I know. Wrap your lips around that.
Yeah. He's just intentionally spilling stuff everywhere.
Oh yeah, he's sloshing it all over.
He's using like a blender, like a mid-70s era blender that you get a feeling has been sold over and over at garage sales in El Paso several times.
Probably never cleaned.
Yes. So he makes these disgusting margaritas. Bud asks Belle, are you filled with relief or with regret over your old enemy? And Elle says regret over her not, over the bride finally being gone.
Originally, it was a little bit of both, which he calls her out on it. Like, no, it's got to be one or the other.
Yeah. She's brought the briefcase of money, $1 million in this briefcase for that Hanzo sword. She watches from across the room. Bud open up the briefcase. He goes through the money, big old smile on his face, then kind of digs down a couple of stacks in these bound bills of money. And out from the suitcase, Oz, jumps a Black Mamba snake.
Kobe Bryant himself pops out of the suitcase. Yeah.
Hit a 17-foot turnaround.
All right.
Kobe. And the snake just jumps out and bites Bud in the face like three
times. On
repeat,
pow, pow, pow.
Oh, so awful and brutal. Oh, and Elle's just watching from across the room.
Oh, yeah, Bud is just a tornado of panic.
Yeah, well, yeah. You just
I understand it, but yeah. Yeah. It's like he's...
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
I was just flying all around the kitchen area of this trailer. Like his face is just swollen immediately. Like it's like he knows what's happening, because obviously it's happened, but it's like I'm dying. Like I'm going to die.
Yeah. And in the meantime, she's across the room. She's got this little pocket notebook that she takes notes on, and she's just reading him facts about Black Mamba venom.
Yeah.
What a cruel person Elle is.
She's just terrible.
Yeah, she's the worst. She recollects the money. As she's doing that, Bill calls. She tells him Bud's dead. Bride put a Black Mamba in his trailer. Yep, that's her thing, right? She was Black Mamba.
Man, wow. She got him.
Yep.
Oh, well. I'll be right over.
Yeah.
Once you smoke some weed or something.
Yeah.
Almost like your brother's dead. Just go have a joint. I'll be there in a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, God. She tells Bill, you know, look under the grave marked Paula Schultz, and you'll find the resting place of Beatrix Kiddo.
Yeah.
We finally get her official name. Yeah. And this whole time he's been calling her Kiddo, and that's her actual last name.
Right. That's her last name. And we get just this real cute, like, flashback to, like, grammar school as they're taking attendance.
Yeah. The really fun little cutaway scene.
Yeah.
Elle goes to leave. She's got this money packed up. She goes to leave. And as she walks out of Bud's place, we get a shot of Beatrix's feet just double kicking right in the chest. It sends her back into this trailer. And then as we get a brutal fight scene, if we thought the fight with Vernita Green was brutal.
Oh, this tops it by five, at least.
I love some of the little things in this fight. Again, it's a very narrow trailer. Mm-hmm. And on several occasions, Elle is, because she's got this new Hanzo sword.
Right.
You know, the bride's, or Beatrix's Hanzo sword. And she's trying to unsheathe it. And she keeps hitting her elbow or like
on the wall,
Or the back, like the hilt of the sword on the wall. Because she doesn't have enough room to take it out.
She can't get it all the way out.
And so they're fighting again. They're kicking each other like in the crotch, lampshade.
Oh, yeah.
They're like lamps to the head. Falling through chairs. Beatrix throws the can of Bud's chew at Elle's face.
Oh, it's so gross. And she even says, gross. Like...
That was my favorite line delivery in the entire film. Gross.
Gross. Because, I mean, it really was delivered with just gross.
Like, yeah.
it was gross. What we're doing to each other is mean enough, but that was just gross.
Yeah. Beatrix, like, Elle does like a running jump kick at Beatrix, and Beatrix grabs her leg and throws her through the drywall.
Yeah, into
the bathroom. They keep fighting in there. Beatrix tries to drown Elle in the toilet. She does the whole flush the toilet to breathe bit. After Elle finally kind of gets in command, kicks down Beatrix, and she retreats to get the Hanzo sword. Beatrix comes to in Bud's bedroom and sees his Hanzo sword in an old golf bag.
Yeah.
So he didn't sell it.
No.
It was there the whole time. And so they face off in the hallway, each armed with a Hanzo sword.
Of course, Bud's dead body and the Black Mamba snake are still just
They're still there. Back in the kitchen.
Yeah, they're just there.
Yeah.
I like the exchange. She's like, I thought he pawned that. Well, I guess that makes him a liar, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, of all things to call a dead man. Like, I guess he lied to you.
They stare each other down. Beatrix asks Elle, you know, like, what did you say to Pai Mei that made him snatch out your eye?
Right.
Called him a miserable old fool. We then cut away to moments after Pai Mei has plucked out her eye in the past. And again, very brutal. And she's just shrieking because somebody just pulled her eyeball out.
Just pulled her eye out.
Elvin tells Beatrix, I killed Pai Mei. I killed your master.
Yeah.
By poisoning his fish heads. What a way to go.
That's why I don't eat fish heads.
I hope that's how I die.
Poison fish heads.
Poison fish heads.
After plucking someone's eye out.
Yes, that's how I want
to
go.
I want it to be that sequence.
Yeah, somebody poisoned my fish heads. That's how I want to die. They charge each other in this tiny hallway, in this tiny trailer. They cross swords and just kind of like lock eyes as they lock swords.
Just kind of jostling back and forth.
And
it's almost like this is like a WWE test of strength.
Yeah. Or like, you know, like two rhinos locking horns kind of thing. Yeah. And as the music amps up and gets louder and escalates. And then as I know you and I saw this together, because I remember sitting next to you for this next moment. And Beatrix plucks out Elle's other eye.
Yes.
And I remember I don't think I've been in a movie theater that has, at least with me, this was the most visceral theater experience I have ever had in my entire life. A close second was Gandalf and the Balrog falling in the beginning of the Two Towers.
Right.
But every person in this theater, I swear, just jumped up and just screamed, holy.
Oh, yeah.
At the same time.
We lost it.
Yeah. And everybody did.
Yeah.
So L is just flailing around the bathroom. Like, just flailing.
Oh, you know, yeah.
Like, very similar to the Priz character in Blade Runner when she gets shot.
And she
won't go down. And so she's just flailing and just shrieking and screaming.
And still wanting to fight. Come here! Like, get over here! I'm gonna kill you! Like,
L drops the eyeball on the... Or not L. Beatrix drops the eyeball on the floor, squishes it between her toes.
Yeah, it's pretty gross.
Yeah. And then does not kill her. Just leaves. So
right.
You see the Black Mamba on her way out, so you know that she's in there with the Black Mamba.
It kind of hisses at her.
Yeah.
Like,
so, yeah. What a scene, Oz.
Not that she would have had use for two Hanzo swords, but I'm curious. Like, she just took one.
Yeah. Yeah. She left the other one.
Yeah.
She could have pawned it for $250.
Gotten a pair of shoes for those feet that just kept getting stepped on.
Oh, we then change to a tropical locale. Very, very different. Kind of a pretty hard right turn here.
Yeah, I really love the cinematography of this setup here.
Yeah.
Of just showing that, like, early morning, like, wide-angle lens. Like, it's just... I had it as a good and then took it out. But I was like, man, I just really enjoyed that.
She pulls up to this Mexican brothel to shake down... an old friend, an old father figure of Bill's named Esteban, who's a semi-retired pimp.
Uh-huh.
They have a very uneasy conversation.
Yes.
About just kind of what he has done and,
right.
and Bill and revenge. And eventually he gives up Bill's location.
Yeah. Without really any begging, just this is where he's at. Yeah. Shiva's like, what? Why did you tell me? Like, I don't think she expected it to be that easy.
Yeah.
But why did you tell me? It's because he would have wanted me to.
Yeah. He'd want you to know.
Yeah. It's like, how else was he ever going to see you again?
Yeah. So we're into Act Three here, Oz, and Beatrix arrives at Bill's hacienda. She stalks in with her gun drawn, sees Bill's Hanzo sword, and then she turns a corner and there is Bill and her daughter, who she did not know was alive, BB. No. Pointing toy guns at her, going, bang, bang, mommy.
Yeah, you're dead, mommy. Ugh.
And just the look on Beatrix's face there. Oh, just heart-wrenching.
Just harrowing,
heart-wrenching. Just this combination of shock and joy and anger and relief and, oh.
Yeah.
Yes. That moment right there kind of summarized this entire plot.
Oh, yeah.
Honestly, for the whole movie. Beatrix then plays along after she kind of collects herself, composes herself, then just gives BB just the biggest hug. Just the biggest hug. Bill tells Beatrix that he had told BB that mommy's been asleep and she's been dreaming of her and that one day she'll wake up and find them. And BB just says, I've waited a long time for you to wake up, mommy. Very articulate four-year-old, by the way.
Yeah, it's so just innocent, but yet, like, worldly, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like BB's not shaken that she's seeing her mother for the first time.
No, she's totally, like...
She's happy to see her, but she's not shocked.
But, right, she's not shocked, she's not shy, she's not even excited. It was almost like today's the day it was supposed to happen, you know? Yeah, she's seen some stuff.
Yeah, that's one way to put it. Bill makes sandwiches using a gigantic kitchen knife. while he and BB tell the story of how she accidentally killed her fish Emilio.
Yeah.
While Tuckin and BB, Bill tells her that he knew what would happen to mommy when he shot her, but he didn't know what would happen to him. So he's told BB that So again, as you said, she's seen a lot. She's heard a lot.
Yeah.
After BB falls asleep, Beatrix comes downstairs to Bill.
Especially when the movie she wanted to fall asleep to was Shogun Assassin.
Yeah.
Which I just love that little throw. What, do you want to watch a movie with me, mommy? Yeah. What do you want to watch? Shogun Assassin. Oh, that's too long. And Beatrix is like, no, it's not. Like,
I'm going to spend some time with my daughter watching Shogun Assassin.
And right? Bill is like Snake Charmer is a perfect fit.
Yeah.
Because
he's very charming.
You get the vibe when you're around him that he's a terrible guy, but he's not a bad guy. Like, you get the sense like he's probably unorthodox, but he's probably a great father.
She's well taken care of. She's educated.
You know, there's never been a downplay. Like, you could tell he really loved Beatrix.
Yeah.
So even raising BB, it was, I want you to know about your mom. I want you to, but I'm going to be honest with you. I wasn't very nice to her.
He doesn't hide anything from her.
No.
Yeah.
No. And it's just as confusing a character as Bud, but on the other end of that spectrum.
Yeah.
Of like, how could a guy that seems to be so caring, like, just be so awful?
So Beatrix comes downstairs, Bill, looking at her Hanzo sword. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I know what you got to do. There's a beach out back. We should go out there. And as he's kind of laying out what they should do for this like climactic battle, she just lunges for his Hanzo sword, and then he pulls a gun and just shoots the TV right next to her,
right,
and just kind of sends her flying back, shoots a big piece of fruit in front of her, which like splatters all
it
over
it. It just laughs about it.
Yeah,
like
threatens to shoot her in the knee.
Yeah.
Oh god. And again, that's where you really see like this is the awfulness. Yeah.
Absolutely.
This is the sadistic guy,
and it's a switch. Like, yeah. It's not one of those, you know, quote unquote, like insane people that are just always insane with a bit of like even irrational rationality. Mm-hmm. This is a guy that's like, I could be cold or I could be warm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm in control of both. Yes,
he's a sociopath, not a psychopath. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
He knows what he's doing. And he just says, like, before we do anything else, I got some unanswered questions, and then shoots her right in the knee with a truth serum dart.
Yeah, his greatest invention.
Yeah, and he tells an interesting, I don't know if metaphor is the right word here. You can help me out, English guy. But he's curious about, like, why did you do what you do? Why did you want to marry Tommy? And he compares, like, marrying Tommy as, like, Superman pretending to be Clark Kent.
Yeah, so metaphor is the right word.
Yeah. And it, ultimately, the message is like, you're not being true to yourself. You're a killer.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, Peter Parker wakes up Peter Parker and puts on the suit of Spider-Man.
Yes.
Bruce Wayne puts on Batman.
You know, yeah, but Superman puts on Clark Kent.
Yeah. Superman wakes up Superman.
Yeah. So, you know, she admits that her life, again, she's under the truth serum at this mm-hmm. point. Her life in El Paso wouldn't have worked, but she would have had BB.
Yeah.
Ultimately, that's the bottom line there.
Right.
When asked why did you run away with my baby, we flash back to her last assignment that he had sent her on, and she's in a hotel room. She takes a pregnancy test positive. She realizes she's pregnant, and moments later, there's a knock at the door, and it's an assassin coming for her.
Yeah.
So like the mark that she was out on had caught wind. She was in town.
She'd been spotted or something,
and so they sent somebody out for her. And it's another female, and she comes in. There's a little back and forth, like, you know, Beatrix throws a knife at her, and like she uses the gun to like block. Yeah. It's just a fun, quick scene.
Yeah, it really is. I've forgotten about it until I watched it again.
Same with me. Yeah.
When she was telling, I'm like, wait, because even when she was telling about the pregnancy thing, I'm thinking, like, I started to flashback. I'm like, I thought, isn't there a scene about this? And then they cut to the scene.
Yeah. So this assassin has a shotgun on her. Beatrix has a pistol on the assassin. And it's your old fashioned standoff. And mm-hmm. Beatrix says, like, I'm the deadliest woman in the world. I'm Annie Oakley with this thing. You know, you'd be dead in a second if I wanted to. But right now I'm scared. And it's because I just found out I'm pregnant. She convinces the assassin to look at the pregnancy test and
then read the box because she didn't understand. It just was one of those comical little things.
Yeah, there was some low-key humor in there too. Yeah. With this assassin's like, I don't know what this means.
Right, just ton of tension.
Yes.
But then as she's reading the box and it's like reading out loud the same thing we just heard Beatrix read out loud.
Yes. And this assassin lets her go.
Mm-hmm. Congratulates her.
Just says congratulations and she's gone. Just a ghost in the wind. You know, back to Beatrix and Bill, and she says, you know, that blue strip changed everything, and I didn't tell you because I knew you'd claim BB, and she deserved to be born with a clean slate. So she was doing this all for mm-hmm. her unborn child.
Right.
Bill says that, like, you know, I assumed you were dead when you didn't come back from that mission, and Bill says he overreacted.
Yeah.
When he found out she was pregnant and getting married.
I mourned you for 3 months. Yes. I overreacted.
Overreact.
And even she was like, yeah, she leans forward, you overreacted. Like, That's what you call it.
Mm-hmm. At this point, they're sitting on like a patio, like out, yeah. just right outside of his home. And she just says, "You and I have unfinished business." And he looks at her, just goes, "Baby, you ain't kidding."
Mm-hmm.
And he then swings his sword at her. So this is happening right now.
Yeah.
And there's a little fight at the table. And she eventually knocks his sword away. They never get up. They're both seated right. on his chairs at this table, at this patio. And she hits him with the 5-point palm heart exploding technique.
Yeah. As he's instantly spitting up blood.
He coughs up blood and just with a look of surprise on his face. And the first thing he says is like, "Pai Mei taught you that?"
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And she's crying. Like,
yeah.
he is the love of her life.
Yeah.
You know, and it's
the father of her child.
But again, it's that same concoction of emotion of,
yeah,
I'm sorry, I'm happy, I'm relieved. Yeah. Like, I did it. Like, I did it.
Yes.
This movie was called Kill Bill, not Almost Kill Bill.
not Maim Bill.
Right. Hurt Bill.
Wound Bill.
Yeah, we wouldn't have covered part one if it was called that.
Wing Bill. Right. Nick Bill.
Yeah, exactly.
they share a little laugh as she kind of covers some blood that's coming out of his mouth, and he just looks at, like, just says, like, "How do I look?" And she says, "You look ready."
Yeah.
He gets up, takes 5 steps, and falls over dead.
Yeah.
Next morning, she carries BB to the car. We see them at a hotel. She's watching Heckle and Jekyll.
Heavy sleeper, that BB.
Yeah.
There's gunshots and...
Yes. She was out. Either that or she was still watching Shogun Assassin.
Large home Bill lived in.
Beatrix is on the floor in the bathroom, kind of crying and laughing at the mm-hmm. at the same time. She hugs and kisses BB. The music gets louder, and then we see some on-screen text. "The lioness has rejoined her cub, and all is right in the jungle." We then get the full Kill Bill credits with all of the characters, including the characters from part mm-hmm. one. And we end with BB and Beatrix Kiddo, a.k.a. the bride, a.k.a. Black Mamba, a.k.a. Mommy.
Yep.
And that's our friends, is Kill Bill Volume 2.
Yeah.
Whew. A lot of plot to that one, Oz.
Yeah, there was.
Hey, at this point in the show, folks, Oz and I will each give our own unique rating to the film we've been yapping about, 2004's Kill Bill Volume Dose. Oz, how would you rate this flick?
I'm going to give this 9.5 clogged toilets.
9.5 clogged toilets.
Yeah, poor Bud.
He lived a very sparse lifestyle.
Yes. Yeah.
And again, you get the idea, it was by choice.
Oh, yeah. Almost like, I don't know, it's almost like when he was out of action, all the weight of that action just come crashing on him.
Yeah.
And he's like, I just have to live with this pain.
I would love to see like a character study of the Bud character. Mm-hmm. Like there's so much to unpack there.
Oh yeah, for sure. What are you giving it?
My rating, I'm going to go with 91 poisoned fish heads.
Okay.
Have fun finding an image for that.
Yeah, I'll just go with a fish head. You can't tell if one's poisoned or not.
You got to put the little, like the skull and crossbones over it.
Yeah, there you go.
Next up, folks, we have Outside Insights. Oz and I have been scouring the interwebs, searching for unprofessional reviews that tickle our funny bones, and we hope they tickle yours as well. Oz, what's your Outside Insight?
Mine is really quick. It's from Morgue.
Morgue?
With a half salute emoji. Left last October. Half star. Never seen Kill Bill 1. Hardly paid attention to Kill Bill 2. But that girl-on-girl fight... That girl-on-girl fight scene slayed, I guess.
It slayed.
Yeah. Never seen the first one. Hardly paid attention to the second one. That girl-on-girl fight slayed. Half star. Like,
something tells me Morgue is male.
Yeah. He probably didn't button his shirt all the way up either.
Probably also works at the same strip club as Bud.
Probably. Wears a lot of denim. So. What do you got for your outside insight?
Mine, as always, comes from the Internet Movie Database. It is a 1 out of 10 review left in May of 2004, so very shortly after it hit theaters. And I'll you normally don't read the subjects line, but I'm going to read this one. It's okay. It's Zzzz Bill.
Sleepy Bill.
Yes. I opted to see Lady Killers instead of this movie recently, but after a few people said it was so great, I decided to give it a chance. Wrong move. Why was Uma crying after striking the fatal blow? It was about as dumb as her going after everyone with that sword, even though she was an expert marksman with a gun. Although Lady Killers wasn't as funny and I had hoped, it was the better movie of the two. My recommendation is you skip both of these and read a good book. I don't know what it is. I have a thing about when like these reviews like reference other movies.
Oh yeah, well you know I love it when you find them. I have to see
the Coen brothers' third worst movie.
I have a hard time sometimes finding like Letterboxd reviews that actually do a lot of references. A lot of them, because of the nature of Letterboxd, where you're logging your films or whatever, a lot of it is very like, I haven't thought much about this. It's my initial reaction.
Yeah.
And so they're still fun to read through sometimes. Yeah. So this guy's like, didn't see the first one. Didn't pay attention to the second one. I'm like, why are you rating it, dork?
Boy, that hot girl on girl fight scene.
Yeah, it's Slade. Am I right?
High five. Well, hey, folks, it's that point in the show you've all been waiting for, our signature segment, the 3-2-1, in which Oz and I each share three goods, two bads, and one... about the film in question, Kill Bill Volume 2. Oz, my friend, what are your three goods?
My first one, I'm sure it's on your list. I'm taking it anyway. Hanzo sword fight.
Yep. Can't beat it.
No, Hanzo sword fight. It's the crazy 88 fight scene of this film. So that goes without saying. First one, Hanzo sword fight. Second one, just that whole Pai Mei scene.
Yeah. That was a possible good for me. The beard strokes and the cameras. Yes, the camera zooms is what sells.
It's just the laughing and like it. And so, but it's just also brutal, just the brutal training and the complete disregard for whoever he's training. Like, this is the training, you're in or you're out, you know? So that I really liked. And my third, just Michael Parks delivering dialogue.
Yes.
Guys. I don't know how or why he wasn't bigger than he was, but just Michael Parks delivering dialogue.
Son number one.
It was a Kevin Smith movie called Tusk that he has a huge part in with Justin Long. And he is just chewing scenery and dialogue in that movie. But it's just so captivating.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about Michael Parks, but RIP, man. So that's my third good. What do you got?
Oh God, I got so many potential goods here. Let's start with, I'm just going to recap what I already said, just because I love it so much. Uh-huh. Just Bud. I love, love the Bud character. I would love to see, even if it's like a short story or something, like just more about, I want to know more about Bud. I want to know why he's so uncaring about himself, but yet still thinks so much of himself. And I want to know more about his relationship with Bill and how it became strained. And there's so much to that character.
I gotcha.
My second good mirrors a good I had last week. One of my goods from last week was the whooshing sound of the bride jumping over the couch during the Vernita Green fight. So I'm going to go with the whooshing of Kiddo's ponytail as she spars with Pai Mei. She kind of shakes her head into the cameras behind her, and you hear the whooshing of her ponytail.
Yeah.
And Oz, the third good... I'm also going to give a tip of the cap to Patreon subscriber Melissa L for literally and figuratively inspiring this one. Our daughter's name is Beatrice. That somehow that sound happens every time you say her name.
It's part of it.
So yes, her first name is Beatrix, as I can't remember. I think I referenced this during the Aliens
recap you did.
Several
you
months
did.
Ago. We were trying to think of, just two two females who we thought were just absolutely BA, and just with both of us enjoying pop culture so much, we decided to just, you know, let's just own it and lean into it and just be the nerds we are. And so our daughter's name is Beatrix from Kill Bill, with a middle name Ellen from the Alien franchise. You don't run into a whole lot of Beatrixes. We also wanted a name that was unique, not like weirdo unique, but like, but unique enough, you know, one that you don't hear a whole lot. And so, her namesake is Beatrix from the Kill Bill movies.
You
and
got you got yourself a BA daughter there.
We do. We occasionally call her kiddo. Patreon subscriber Melissa L often refers to her as BB. So
I unrelated, I call my daughter kiddo all the time. And I actually call my son Bud. Not intentional, but yeah.
She, your daughter also has a Hanzo sword.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, good Lord. Not at 13.
And your son works at the local strip club. So,
well, he does. He's 9. But yeah, he works the morning shift.
They have a surprisingly robust apprenticeship program.
It is. It's well paid. No loans.
No, like, no student loans. Yeah. It's all the on-job training. Yeah. All right there.
And you're on your own after a few months. So
So yes, my third good is that these movies inspired our daughter's name. And fun. And we love her and we love the inspiration. So hey, Oz, what are your two bads?
My first bad, and it's my only strike against her in this particular film, is Daryl Hannah's forced laughter.
I killed your master.
It just was like, this was Daryl Hannah's opportunity. This was her John Travolta moment. It easily could have been, resurrection of a career, somebody that had a very promising career and then just kind of filtered away. And I think she nailed it. She nailed this role. But just her forced laughter in that scene was like, it just didn't take me out, but it's like, oh, Daryl. I had a hard time finding a second one. I just went with the extremely dialogue heavy third act only because of the dialogue. It needed to be there. Like it's just, I'm sitting there like, what am I going to have for a second bad? Maybe just all the talking.
Well,
like,
I'll jump onto that as well. This was one of my possible bads. It, like, the pacing of this movie as a whole was much different than the first one.
Yeah.
And like the IMDb, you know, volume one has an 8.2, volume two actually has an 8.0. So it's a couple tenths lower. And I have a feeling that it's largely because it's just the pacing is so different. It's not, it's not as frantic as the first one. It's more methodical, and coming off the sprint of the first one, I think that I could see that throwing some folks.
For sure. Because this, I view this, I don't look at this movie as a sequel. Yes, it's volume two, but I look at the same way I look at the three Lord of the Rings movies. I look at it as one super long movie broken into three parts. I look at this as one movie broken into two parts.
Yeah.
But whereas the Lord of the Rings movies, you could watch all three of them in succession, and they carry the same pacing. Mm-hmm. And this one, I feel like if you were to watch part one and part two back to back, you're sputtering out. Like by the time you get to this finish line, you're 4.5 hours of movie in, and now you're getting hit with just dialogue after dialogue. Like it's just Tarantino's like, I got a half hour of film left, but I still have, 39 to 40 pages of dialogue. Like, dump it in there, like just the whole conversation about Emilio the Goldfish, the whole conversation, great dialogue. I'm not saying it's bad dialogue, but just excessive of like, you're stopping your dialogue to tangent into more dialogue to just make a point about your current dialogue. So I was like, that was my second bad.
Yeah, it's excessive.
Yeah. So that, and again, not bad, just excessive. That's why I hit my bad column. So what are your bads?
And that kind of leads into my first bad, which is just, Tarantino's ego. Like his pretension comes through in scenes like that. And he's always seems like one of those guys, he loves hearing his own voice. And like, And that also spins into, I'm kind of combining two possible bads I had here. Like, I still have just, he's a talented writer, talented director, but just, you know, this white guy writing this awful misogynistic dialogue and anti-Semitic dialogue and like ableistic dialogue and racist dialogue. And it's just like, ugh. Like it's, there's an uneasiness I have to watching his films, and it, like, it's great stuff, but at the same time, like, it's a white guy writing all this,
right?
Like, has he earned the right to do this? Like,
yeah, it's just, it's, well, especially you go out to Pulp Fiction where he's written himself to do it.
Yeah.
You know,
ego pretension.
Yeah. And, we've never seen a filmmaker like Tarantino, and I don't think we'll ever see one like him again. Mm-hmm. He's just an enigma of, you know, born at the right time, raised the right, the right way to create what he's created.
Worked at the right video store.
Exactly. It's like, he's just this, like I said, just this enigma that
it's a good word for him.
There's no formal film training outside of like, it's not Brian Bosworth. There was a former NFL player that, like, growing up, his dad had this regiment of, like, you will, like, all you do is live football. That's it.
It was a quarterback.
He played for the Seahawks.
Yeah, and he went to, like, UCLA or, oh, God, the name is popping in and out of my head. But, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
But it's like
he just lived and breathed football, and that was it.
That's it.
And he failed in the NFL.
Yeah, but he made it to the NFL. So it's like his journey did hit, you know, where it should have hit. But it's like, it's almost like a lab test, you know?
Like an automaton.
Yeah. It's like we've raised you to be this and you became this. So like you say, he failed in the NFL. Yes. But at the same time, I guess the experiment was a success, you know? And that's kind of how I feel sometimes about Tarantino, is the guy is nothing but film. And so it's like, yeah, I guess it's cool to see him reach that pinnacle, you know, but at the same time, he's not won an Oscar for any of his film, you know? So it's like, yes, he's hit, but he's such an unorthodox way to get there. It's just weird. Like, we look at his films and we think you can't say those things, but at his level, he's like, everybody I talk to in the movie says them.
Yeah.
You know, because like that's his circle.
It doesn't mean you have permission to do it.
Yeah. Like, I watched enough blaxploitation stuff. Like, no, that's not how it works. Mm-hmm. Oh, but no, you're not wrong about loving to hear his own voice. I've listened to several episodes of the podcast he and Roger Avery have. Mm-hmm. It's just this encyclopedia. Because Roger Avery's no slouch either.
Yeah.
You know, he's an accomplished film director. He worked in the same video store. Like, these two have somewhat similar upbringings. Only Avery was like, I'm going to go live a little bit of my life and get married and have a kid and do that stuff. And Tarantino's like, movies.
Yeah.
But it's like, they'll be talking about a movie and Tarantino will just tell you like what year, what theater, like just break down everything about a film. And it's like, man, it's just so encyclopedic. It's just so bizarre.
I remembered the quarterback was Todd Marinovich.
There it was. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I knew as soon as I heard it, I'd know it, but yeah. But yeah, just system. But not system, but like from birth.
Yeah, like that's life.
Yeah.
This is what you are destined to do, and it's all you will do.
And you just can't help as an outsider looking at it with just pity.
Yeah.
Of like, man, he had no control.
Yeah.
And I've read Tarantino's, you know, autobiography, and in some ways it's kind of that same way of like, it's like I grew up in movie theaters. You know, my mom would take me to everything. Like everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm 6 years old watching Cannibal Holocaust and, you know, stuff like that. So it's like from there, it's like, this is whatever. So, all right.
That's enough out of mine. So that was my first bad. That was my first bad.
Yeah.
My second bad, and I'm totally playing with a cultural thing here.
Uh-huh.
early in volume two, we see the Reverend and the Reverend's wife and, yeah. And Two Pines. And I know this is a Southern thing, I think. But I never quite was able to, there's always something, I always feel odd when I hear a man, you know, a man and a woman who are married. I always get weird when I hear the man call his wife mother.
Mother, yeah. I knew once you got going, I'm like, I think he's going with the mom, pa kind of thing.
Like Mike Pence does it. Like he calls his wife mother. And I get it's a cultural thing. Like I don't want this to sound like I'm coming after the culture, but it's just weird to me. It's just weird to me.
Yeah.
She has a name. Just use her name.
Right. I gotcha.
Or just say your mom or mother. Yes. I will never refer to Patreon subscriber Melissa L as mother.
Yeah.
In casual conversation with other adults.
Yes.
That's the other thing with other adults.
You're not going to Buster Bluth it.
Mother boy.
Mother.
So that's my two bands, Oz. What's your huh?
It's just kind of something we've tiptoed. Like, why are Bud's post-Assassin days just so disgusting? It's like same with kind of what you said. I want to know more.
Yeah.
I don't really care. Like, we got Oren's backstory. We didn't really we never met Vernita Green enough to know, whatever. She was the opening. And I feel like we got just enough of L. Just enough. You know,
you didn't need more than that.
Yeah, it's like, you know, she did the Pai Mei thing. It didn't go as well. It's like she's constantly in Beatrix's shadow.
Yeah. That's her life.
That's all we needed.
That's all there is to her.
You know, and of course we saw Beatrix unfold on screen. So it's like, but then there's Bud.
Yeah, we got Oren's huge backstory.
Yeah, it's like we know everything about her, you know, and it's like then there's Bud. It's like, what is it? Like, I'm with you. So I just want to know why his post-Assassin days are just so awful.
Why he's cleaning clogged toilets in an El Paso strip club.
And not arguing it. Like, okay. Like, he just got sent home, but hey, before you go, like, basically, you're fired. But before you go, you clean the toilet. Yep, I'll do it. Yeah. I'm like, no, the answer is no.
No self-worth.
Right. So that's my huh. What's your huh?
Yeah, my huh. I gotta throw two out there really quick. My first one is did this will be my prelude, huh?
Yeah.
Did no one notice at Two Pines the bride kissed Bill on the lips twice, like during the rehearsal?
Yeah, I noticed, but I wasn't there, so. Yeah, but she did. It was there was some passion behind it.
Yes. His friends, the Reverend, didn't elbow his mother. You see what's happening?
Look at that, mother.
My real huh is going to be, how big of a knife do you need to spread mayonnaise? How big and how sharp?
Especially if the mayonnaise is at the top. Like, I understand if it's, you know, all the way at the bottom and you're trying to get the last of it. But yeah, that's...
Do you need a butcher knife to spread mayonnaise and cut crust off?
I thought it was kind of cool. Like, he's, you know, less dishes. Fewer dishes that way.
Stainless steel. It cleans easier.
Yeah. Why not?
So, yeah, gigantic knife to spread.
It was a big one. He's pointing with it and...
Well, it did add a little bit to the scene because there's just that... Because he's so...
Yeah, you just don't know what to expect out of him.
He's just going to lunge at Beatrix with his knife, but So, big knife.
Good one. Yeah.
Oh, hey, Oz, that wraps Kill Bill Volume 2 and our first week of our third annual Wives Choice.
Yeah.
What do we got next week?
Well, next week was my wife's choice, mm-hmm. and she has selected Valley Girl
mm-hmm.
from 1983. Martha Coolidge directed, Nicolas Cage, Deborah Foreman, E.G. Daily mm-hmm. yarn.
Dottie.
Yeah, it's Loader Dottie, a rebel. I've seen this movie several times, and it just, I like the camaraderie of these two. Mm-hmm. I like the kind of pseudo Romeo and Juliet story behind them. of they shouldn't work, but they do. I think there's a lot of really good message to take from this too, especially at the age of these two, where they are, they're teens basically. And, but they're teens from other side of the tracks. And it's it's that
kind of story.
Yeah. And I just think there's a lot of charming message here. If you allow yourself to look beyond and be like, you know, it's like, you know, where you are doesn't, where you come from shouldn't matter, but it's who you are that should.
There's also a strong message about, like, you know, social influence and peer pressure.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it really is, I don't want to go as far to say it's a character study, but more of a cultural study.
Sure,
I'll of buy that, that of that time, you know. But it's because there's not a ton of plot. It's really not a whole lot different than Pretty in Pink.
Yeah, it's all character, zero plot.
Yeah, and it's like they just move through their life of, are they together? Then they're not. It's like 1983's The Notebook. You know, it's really, I probably should shut up before I keep giving away all my movie marriages. but no, that's what we're watching next week is the Nicolas Cage and Deborah Foreman Valley Girl. I like Deborah Foreman. I've always liked Deborah Foreman. Mm-hmm. You know, never really made it out of the early to mid 80s.
Yeah.
But she did her role. So that's what we're watching next week. Kill Bill Volume 1 has been out since yesterday.
It's doing big numbers. It's up there with Story of Ricky.
It is 258 YouTube views in the first day.
Only 253 of those were mine.
That's right. But it's still like, I'm like, wow, people like their Kill Bill stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, like, just for comparison, I'm going to look real quick because I'm curious how many, like, podcast listeners we've had for the show. Let me pull
1
that.
1 million.
Analytics episodes we've had? 4.
And the kids today, they're all about the YouTube.
People prefer our beautiful faces, apparently.
Well, I mean, so, who wouldn't, you know? If you had a chance to look at our mugs.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Ask our wives.
Wives. That's from Borat's subsequent movie film.
Oh, okay. That was from the second one. Okay.
That's from the subsequent one, yeah.
I was referencing the Ali G show.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so Kill Bill Volume 1, 258 views, 1 comment. Comment from your wife.
My wife.
She put, it's also our daughter's namesake. I'm going to just reply, you don't say.
She's very proud of that.
I'm going to put, you don't say. That's all I put there. So, but yeah, next week, Valley Girl. And then we're like halfway through February already.
Yeah.
So, social media wise, you guys can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. There is a link to Patreon down below. You can always join in. We've got some fun Patreon stuff coming up soon.
We do. We are actively involving our Patreons.
Yes, we are. We're trying to, anyway.
Yes.
Some of them are like, yeah, you don't want me on. that's not true. We do. But no, we will be back next week to cover Valley Girl. And so, for another episode, let's talk about flicks. I'm Oz.
I'm Curtis.
We'll see you guys next week.